Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit Kane5.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Pleasure. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I am super excited to be sitting in the studio, having a little bit of a fangirl moment with Chef Jeremy Fox from Rustic Canyon out in Santa Monica. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So Chef Fox was in town with the Momo Som crew for their one-night dinner series recently, giving New Yorkers a taste of the food that he's doing out in Rustic Canyon. So we're definitely going to talk a little bit about that menu. But we're going to meander a little bit before we get there. And I wanted to start chatting a little bit about texture. It was like something I was thinking about eating the way through the menu. Kind of some themes seem to pop out to me, but I'm wondering for you, when you're thinking about your food, when you're thinking about kind of the way it feels in your mouth or your diner's mouth, like, is that, does that work into your play, or?
I think it does. It's not always a conscious thing. I think it's sometimes where I don't have a very good wine palate, but someone will, after I taste a wine, someone will be like, so don't you taste this? Like, oh, now I taste it. But I think when people ask me, like when you just mention it, I think I do put thought into it. Like, I think about, like, is this just going to feel mushy in your mouth? Is this going to feel too crunchy and dry? Like, it's almost like everything needs, it's like a sandwich. You have, like, the bread and the spread. If one of the two things is out of whack, then it's not really enjoyable. You have to get that ratio down for it to be something you want to keep eating and not just have one bite, but like, okay, that's good.
Well, yeah, there is a difference, and I think this is a challenging thing for new cooks, is it's different to take a bite of something than to eat a plate of something.
That's what I've kind of been focusing on with training my cooks. Like, if it's a soup, if it's a sauce, if you're testing your seasoning for a soup, you have to taste it as if, all right, don't season it as if you're eating a spoon of it, because it needs to be more intense. Can I eat 30 spoons of this, and will it still be the right seasoning? And you have to have that kind of mentality when you're paying attention to that, or else, you know, it's going to be palate fatigue really quickly.
Yeah, well, it's like that space for imagination. Like, you have to think through the dish, also thinking through the meal and the different components, like, on the plate, how they're going to play or not play together.
Yeah, and it doesn't always come together right away. You know, I think even, last night's dinner at Sambar, where, you know, we came 3,000 miles, we came to a new kitchen we hadn't worked in. The polenta was awesome on the last seating. Finally got the polenta just on point where it was just perfect. So you have to just pay attention to all the steps and never think that, all right, I have this mastered, because you can usually, you know, make something a little bit better just by noticing something or tweaking it.
Well, that, like, iteration, I mean, it seems like in what I've been reading about you recently and kind of listening to some of the spaces where you're kind of talking about food or presenting things, there's like a coming back to the table, coming back to the kitchen, this kind of like, you know, shut up and work. But a lot of that is just repetition.
It is repetition. And I think a lot of young cooks don't necessarily understand that. They'll maybe get bored or complacent because they're, you know, I'm doing this dish over and over again. But that's kind of a fun part, is learning to really do something well. And the more you do it, the more it becomes second nature. And that, I think that helps you create things on your own, because it's like I'd never really done much smoking with food. So I was almost always a little intimidated by it, so I kind of never did. And then once I started, I did it once, not really knowing what I was doing. I was like, okay, what else can I do? How can I get this better? And now, you know, that opens up other things to where I'm more willing to learn a new technique or something I haven't done before because I got this thing out of the way. So it makes me a little bit more confident that I can grasp it, I think.
Well, and also just kind of creating space in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I use this story a lot when I'm trying to explain to people like what life is like as a professional cook, where I'm like, there was a summer season, there's a menu season at Gramercy Tavern where I was picking up a dish that had cherry tomatoes on it. And we had all different types of like small tomatoes. And I really brought like all my mental facilities to the best way to try, you know, slice these tomatoes in half and like the perfect selection of them.
Not smash them.
What knife I should use. Like, what was, like, the correct sharpness of the knife. Like, how far I could push it. How much time. What container to put them in. Where on my station to put them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was the right amount. You know, and I explain to people, I'm like, for probably a good 2-week period of my life, that was the biggest intellectual challenge that I was grappling with.
Well, it's great for some people. Wouldn't even think about it. Like, I'm just going to cut the cherry tomatoes because I was told to cut cherry tomatoes and that's it. So not everyone will look at it that as a challenge and as something, what, you know, all the possibilities there are in terms of understanding it.
Yeah. And I think to me, like, that's what makes the cooking process like super fun is like, it's essentially like boundless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things I think is interesting about chefs who have become known for particular like dishes or components is getting, it's like kind of being with a partner for a really long time. It's like your relationship kind of changes. And you served the lavender almonds in the last course last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I ate those feeling like you said with wine tasting where you're like, I don't really like, after someone explains it to you, you're like, oh yeah, totally, I get that. I feel like in a lot of ways that kind of defined my experience of eating your food for the first time, as I was kind of like, I never would have thought of this, but it totally makes sense to me. And it's kind of, I can like have like that Homer Simpson like dope moment. I'm like, oh yeah, this totally, I get it. But
well, that dessert was you know, there's a little backstory with that dessert because I put the menu together for the dinner at Sambar, but I had no idea what I was going to do for dessert. And I was like back and forth. I was like, I don't know, what should I do for dessert? And Matt was like, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about it. To be honest, I would just eat a bowl of your almonds. And so I was like, okay, I kind of built based on that comment. So like, he inspired what that dessert ended up as, with like the warm curds and whey and the honey and the chili and the olive oil and the almonds.
Yeah, it was very pleasant. Well, about those almonds, like, ooh, I mean, can you talk a little bit about kind of your like relationship? Do you ever kind of just like fuck the almonds?
No, those almonds are very important to me. I still, you know, I'm the one who toasts the almonds and seasons the almonds at the restaurant, and I, you know, in my mind, I'll be the guy who's like 75 years old who I'll just come in, you know, to do one thing, and that'll be to season the almonds, because you know, they've followed me, you know, throughout, you know, the relatively short career as a chef. You know, when it started was at Ubuntu in Napa, and you know, I remember seeing and getting the Marcona almonds that were toasted and tossed with rosemary and sea salt at Trader Joe's. And, you know, we were opening Ubuntu and, you know, working on, like, snacks. And we had a ton of lavender up in Napa and at the gardens. And so I thought, you know, it almost looked a little bit like rosemary. And in a controlled amount, it had similar flavor to rosemary, so that's how that kind of came about. And went through different incarnations where I made like a lavender sugar, but I needed more control over. I needed this much lavender, this much sugar, this much salt in order to be balanced. So, you know, I remember Frank Bruni wrote about them, and you know, people really loved them. They were kind of addictive, and you know, I had a, you know, after Ubuntu, I had a couple rough years, and, you know, I had no idea what I was going to do. And at one point I was I had the thought of packaging the almonds and trying to sell them. And I sold them to one place, which was this cube marketplace and restaurant in LA. And the buyer for the restaurant had been to Ubuntu, had been to my pop-up at Animal. And according to her story, she said I didn't need to bring a sample. She was just fine with buying them. But I guess I don't remember necessarily, but I insisted that I bring it to her. So I did, and I was like 3 hours late, because I was very late to everything at the time. And but it kind of worked out because she had gotten through all her other meetings. So like when I got there, we were able to sit, and I married her a couple years later. So. Those almonds are still, you know, very important to me. So I still make sure I season them, and, you know, there's a lot of love in them.
There's like many parts, many layers to the almond story.
Yeah, sure.
Do you feel like there's anything you're working on right now that might be like that next thing? Is there like anything you're unpacking or like fidgeting with where you're like, man, I could have a long-term love affair with this?
Yeah, I think they're kind of fleeting. Like, I'll be really into a dish for, you know, a week or two. And, you know, I think right now we're running a Papa Pomodoro, which is just really kind of rustic, you know, mashup of cooked down tomatoes and olive oil and garlic and bread and basil. And we serve it with kimchi, which I only tried it together because we had kimchi made from Ramp Tops. We had a ton of it. And I thought it would be weird, but the more I ate it, the more it wanted. I started out with a little canal of kimchi, then a little bit bigger, and then like just started piling it on because it seemed like it was just screaming for kimchi. And I don't know, I really liked the combination because it's kind of like two different cultures of peasant food, really like simple things that are together. And we add burrata to make it kind of luxurious. And I really like that dish. The clam and mussel pozole we serve always on the menu at the restaurant seems to be the dish that my time at Rustic Canyon has been probably most represented by.
You serve those two dishes together at the one night dinner as mm-hmm. a mid-course, and I like, you know, I was sitting there eating, I like took a time out with the folks I was sharing dinner with, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on right now? I'm eating like kind of a riff on like a chicken parm something, I don't know, mm-hmm. and a riff on a pozole something at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about that? Then I kind of took a step back and was like looking at the structure of the menu for the evening, and I was like, what's happening?
I think I wasn't necessarily trying to make a cohesive tasting menu. I wanted to embody what Rustic Canyon was in one meal, and that means being a little erratic and a little spastic, and because, you know, we're in Southern California. There's a lot of cultures there, and I've definitely tried to embrace it. When I conceived of the pozole, I was trying to make a Los Angeles dish. I hadn't really worked with, you know, any kind of Mexican food flavors before. So, you know, that was a dish that kind of evolved over time. But what the dish is, like the basic thing, is really what it was conceived as. And, you know, I feel fortunate that Rustic Canyon, I can have different things on the menu. Like we have the pozole, we would have, you know, a simple pea salad and asparagus with a Belgian egg sauce and hota, which is like a Slovakian sauerkraut and smoked ham and chickpea stew, like all these different things on the menu. And I like not having to be committed to one concept, one genre, one origin. And I think that was, you know, what I hope that we got across in the menu last night, even if it was a little all over the place. That's kind of how I work, and to be able to
fun.
Do that and feel okay about that is nice.
Yeah. I thought it was like really fun, and then it really made me I was chatting with a woman who works for the group, and I'm like, is this like the idea of these dinners? Because what I felt, I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm kind of getting this like entree, this like treat, this like window into the restaurant in a way that feels like there's no layers in between me. You know, obviously there's like the entire country, but because there were so many different things happening, I was like, oh wow, it feels like a taste around. I don't know. I really liked it.
Thank you. I think, you know, the point of it was, it wasn't me doing a dinner at Sambar. It was Rustic Canyon at Sambar. So, you know, we sometimes when you do a, you know, a special dinner, you'll, you know, reach into your creative mind and come up with something completely new. And, you know, I purposely wanted to do Rustic Canyon food because that, it was Rustic Canyon at Sambar. And that's why things were as it was.
The kind of thinking about the food that you're doing at Rustic Canyon and the, like, it sounds like the, you talk a lot about it as like a place you feel very safe. Mm-hmm. And kind of not having to commit to one particular cuisine. I mean, can you kind of contrast that with your time at Ubuntu? And like, is that a evolution or is that like a fleeing, or like what's that?
I think it's an evolution. I kind of, you know, I think my career has been in a few parts where I've kind of scrapped everything and started over again. You know, I started cooking in 96 when I went to culinary school. Eventually was the chef at a hotel in Aspen when I was 25, and then realized I wasn't the chef I wanted to be. Started over at the bottom, staging at Manresa, cleaning the walk-in, doing, you know, all the entry-level things, and then it was there for a long time, then opened Ubuntu. And, you know, I think it's been documented of what happened there. And then, you know, I had to eventually be like, all right, I screwed up again. I got to start over again with a completely different philosophy every time. And, you know, Rustic Canyon's been great. It's been something where we've evolved on a very, I think, consistent timeline. It hasn't been, you know, a rocket ship into the stratosphere. It's been, you know, a slow climb, and just constantly getting better, you know, more focused and a little bit more confident over time. And, you know, I think the food's getting better. I think we have a pretty good time, and, you know, it keeps us kind of a good stress level, I think.
Can you talk a little bit about your team?
Yeah. You know, it's I've got a great core team. They've been with me for a long time. My executive sous chef Brittany started out as a line cook 2 years ago, and you know, it's kind of moving very close to, you know, moving in a position where she's, you know, kind of really running the show more and more. Cody, my other sous chef, who came with, you know, again, all my core people start out as line cooks, and, you know, we spent a lot of time going, you know, working on new things, and they've been very receptive to learning and trying new things out. And, you know, over time, it's, you know, there's this really great comfort level where I can say, you know, I'm thinking about this and this, and it's getting to where I don't necessarily have to dictate every component of the dish and how it's done, where it's like, you know, how about these ingredients together, you know, how should we do them? And you know, they've been, you know, it feels like they have a lot of trust in me that you know, we're going in a good direction. And you know, I trust them completely too. So it's like a, you know, I sometimes refer to as a, you know, a football team where if you're a quarterback, if you know your receivers can catch the ball, you can throw it farther and, you know, with more finesse and really make great things happen. And, you know, I feel like they can all catch the ball, and, you know, now they can throw the ball too.
I feel like the other, like, football analogy that comes up for me is the, like, well, it's the intensity of the profession and the kind of like physical and emotional toll that it can take on folks. And you've talked a little bit about wanting to create an environment where you're being a better role model for your chefs on how to kind of have a long-term, you know, situation in that space. What does that look like? I mean, how is that kind of operationally working?
I don't know. It's kind of been something that just slowly happened over the last 2 years. You know, I think, you know, my cooks are wanting to be better cooks and become chefs, and I guess I'm at the point where, you know, I had some time where I got a lot of attention and, you know, it was great for a while, but I'm much better. Like, I just feel a lot of pride seeing them get better. And like, you know, even last night, seeing how I was able to kind of enjoy myself instead of being completely stressed out because, you know, my guys, Cody and Josh, you know, they really had it under control. Like, you know, at one point I was like, man, I haven't taken a piss in 3 hours. They're like, go, chef, we got this. And I was like, all right, I will go to the bathroom.
You're like, this is obviously my issue, not a real issue.
Exactly. And, you know, I remember at one point it was like we were plating something up. I was like, oh, I better get in there. I was like, wait, they've got everything covered. I'm just going to, you know, at that point I just stood back and I was like, okay, great.
Yeah.
This is what it's like to be a chef instead of, you know, being unorganized and having to do everything yourself. It's nice, and I get more enjoyment out of that than like anything just about myself. So. It's like a parent, I think.
Yeah. You know. I feel like for me too, it's like it opens up these like new possibilities. I'm like, wow, if I can kind of let go of feeling like I need to have control over everything, like one, you facilitate this really great space for the people working for you, but two, you're like, well, what's next for me? And that's not like, what's the next big project? You're just kind of like, oh, I have this like spot in my brain I can now use for.
It allows me to, you know, be more organized, come up with new things, to try out new things. And, you know, I'm not always a pleasure to be around. I mean, I have moments, you know, but they're you know, few and far between, a lot less than, you know, I used to just be horrible. So it's just a conscious thing where I'm, you know, trying to be more of a mentor and trying to be, you know, patient and nurturing.
Are you religious at all?
No.
Eric Repair talks about going through like a similar transition, but I think it was really aligned with him, like, becoming like a Buddhist. And it was like interesting. He's like, wow, there's like another way to be. I didn't know.
Yeah, I think just life experience, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your Instagram feed, you post a lot of family meal pics.
Mm-hmm.
You have a hashtag for them, family meal RC. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I think when I first started Family Meal, that there was really bad. It was kind of unfocused. It was just, there was no structure to it. You know, whatever was in the walk-in and whoever was had time just kind of threw something together. And it still took away from, like, the daily prep. And for about 2 weeks, I got rid of Family Meal. I was like, we got to figure something else out. So we just scrapped Family Meal for a while. And, you know, people were a little pissed off, but I just... Sometimes in order to improve on something, you just have to take a break from it. And, you know, what I decided was everyone would have a day a week to make family meal. They would have a certain budget. We would order things for it if they wanted to. They could use scraps as well. And, you know, I think, you know, going back to Ubuntu, it seemed more like it was everything was about like me, and I want Rustic Canyon to be about the restaurant and about everyone who's there. So, you know, everyone's name is on the menu, and I wanted to give recognition for all the hard work that the cooks were doing to, you know, they put a lot of pride in it, and they, you know, it's like a nice competitive thing where everyone wants to, you know, be more creative, and you know, it's nice to see your work on the Instagrams, and you know, that's how that started. And you know, family meal isn't always awesome, but it's usually really good.
You know, you were featured in a recent episode or issue of Lucky Peach, their obsession issue, the fantastic Mr. Fox. How did that article come about? How did they approach you?
I'm not really sure. I know. I think Dave, you know, gave me a heads up that Rachel Kong wanted to speak with me, and she was going to be in town. And you know, Rachel just mentioned something about an obsessions issue, and she wanted to come by and ask me a few questions. And I think where it was leading, talking about obsessions, it just kind of led me to just unload. It was good. It felt really good to just let everything go. And then I kind of freaked out, like, oh my God, what did I do? It was like, and Jerry Maguire, when he prints up this memo and then he freaks out in the morning, like, oh my God, what have I done? And then you know, I was still, you know, really happy that it happened. And I just, once I started talking, I just didn't stop.
How do you feel now?
I feel good. I think it, you know, sometimes as a chef, you feel like you have to be this kind of stoic leader and, you know, infallible. And I think, you know, for people I work with, they got to see, you know, maybe something where I, you know, who I was as a person that I didn't necessarily show. And I think it made me feel like I didn't have to be as tough, and I could be a little bit more human, because I didn't have like secrets. I didn't have things that I was trying to cover up.
I feel like that, to me, always feels like one of the coolest parts of being an adult is, like, you're like, yep, I fucked up.
Yeah.
And, like, that happened.
You can kick yourself and beat yourself about, you know, around about it for a while. And, you know, at some point it's not healthy anymore. You don't, you know, if you've worked to improve things, then, you know, you gotta forgive yourself, and you can't change anything. So you just have to try to make things as good as possible.
The other thing, and I'm not sure this is going to sound maybe a little weird, but, like, there's a certain amount of, like, who really cares, you know? Like who's, like, attached to the different, like, narratives of your life? And that's, like, it's a very, like, personal and, like, intimate space where, there, of course, there's, like, people who are in that space who are impacted by it. But because you're in such a public sphere, there is also, like, this feeling of, like, there's this other group of people who participate or get to know about it, but, like, we're not your friends. Like, you know, I can follow you on Instagram, but, like, you're not my boy. And then there's, like, a whole population of new people who don't really care about your, like, pedigree or backstory. They're just like, wow, I like this food. I want to come back here. And I think, like, that to me is, like, something that's, like, nice, maybe feels nice to, like, just kind of move towards, too. You're just like, hey, there's, like, an audience. There's a different space, too.
Yeah, for me, I think it was closure on a period of my life. It was, you know, Ubuntu was great. It, you know, did great things for my career. And, you know, then for a while, I didn't know how to follow that. And, you know, it took time, and to just be able to be like, all right, that's done. Now I'm on to something else, and I'm really enjoying it. And that's kind of just been a really, really good thing.
You were back in David Kinch's kitchen recently.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? What was that like, kind of coming back?
It was great. It's the second time I've cooked in the kitchen since I left in 2007. I came back for the to cook for a weekend at the 10th anniversary, where a few of the old chefs came back and did the menu. And this is just for a few hours, but it's always great to go back. It looks a lot different in a way than it did, but it's also the same. Like, the bones of it are the same, and it's like going back to a simpler time, like when, you know, no one knew who I was, and I had no idea what the future was holding. I was just there to learn and become a better cook, and to go back there, it was probably like going back to your like childhood home, and everything's kind of the same, but it feels maybe a little smaller, and but you know where everything is, and like, oh, is this like thing still loose? Nope, they fixed that. I wish it was still loose, but.
How did you meet Josh and Zoe?
I met them several years ago. You know, I spent some time in LA. I was considering moving down to LA just for kind of a change of scenery, and just thought they were really cool, really, really down to earth. I went to Milo and Olive and had just a great salad, and it was perfectly dressed. It reminded me of Chez Panisse in terms of the balance of it, and I emailed him. I was like, oh, just wanted to tell you I had a great salad. And, you know, we kept in touch, and, you know, things just kind of came together when, you know, I was kind of, like, just done with, like, doing pop-ups. I wanted to just start working again, and they needed a chef. And, we were all really honest with each other and decided to give it a go. That was, you know, a couple of years ago, and it's one of the best decisions I ever made. And I wanted it to be a good decision for them. Like, I think a lot of people are like, what are you doing? What are you hiring this guy for? He's not going to be around a while. So, you know, I think I wanted people to be like, all right, you're right. So I wanted them to be right.
You talk about wanting to kind of be in that kitchen, you know, for the next, you know, as like a 70-year-old mm-hmm. cook with a bunch of 50-year-old line cooks. I'm curious, like, what does it mean to be, or what do you hope it will mean to be a chef at a place for such a long, like, tenure of time? And then two, how does that work when you, like, if you imagine yourself, like, in that space, so you're 75, 80, whatever, kind of, like, looking back over those years, like, what are the other things that you need there? I mean, is it kind of ownership or lifestyle or money outside of it? There's the things in the kitchen and there's the things outside of the kitchen that both have to be working for that to work.
Mm-hmm. I think there's obviously going to be other projects in the future. You know, I'm helping Josh and Zoe out with a wine bar and a woman named Catherine and her husband Tug with a wine bar in August. And then there might be other projects in the future, but I think I'm just very, very content. It's not complacent. It's just I've kind of been on the roller coaster. I've been where we did this. I want to open another restaurant. I want to do lots of projects, and not letting it happen on an organic timetable. So I think I'm just happy with the natural flow of things. Like I'm not in a rush to do anything. I've got little projects. I've got a book I'm working on. I've got Esther's wine bar, and you know. Even just running Rustic Canyon is not easy. It's, it's constant work, and it's an education for me to become a better manager, and I don't think I'm at the point where I can, you know, successfully do that with several restaurants. I'd like to get to that point one day, but you know, I'm like a cook learning a station. I'm taking the time to learn things and be able to grasp them and become better at this next phase of what my career is.
I was watching one of the Lucky Peach videos. We were talking about how to perfectly dice an onion or Cut an Onion, I can't remember the title, but you were talking about, you know, being in school and going and getting like 5 pound, 10 pound bags of potatoes and like using potatoes to practice dicing on. And I'm wondering, like, kind of like hearing you talk in these different stages through your life, this like ability to kind of just work. Where did you learn that? Is there like a person in your life who kind of showed you how to do that?
I mean, I think my parents taught me to work hard, but I don't know. I guess I always wanted to maybe suffer a little bit from my craft. I remember, you know, my kind of two movies that were very influential in kind of shaping that were Big Night. You know, these brothers were struggling with their restaurant, but it was because they weren't willing to compromise and they were really true to their principles. And then also a movie called Swimming with Sharks, where, has Kevin Spacey, Frank Whaley, Frank Whaley is a young, Hollywood assistant trying to, pay his dues and just getting abused. And, I thought, I think maybe that's how it should be, like, pay your dues, get abused. And I took a lot of abuse. I'm appreciative. Like, I had chefs, throw things at me and, like, slap me and just call me names. And I love those guys. Like, I learned a lot from it. And not everyone responds to that, but I think I was very responsive to that. So I was always willing to pay whatever price I had to pay to get better, which, if I were starting out now, I probably wouldn't be that way. But I was like, yeah, hit me again. I'll take it. So yeah, I was definitely tougher then. I'm a little softy now.
Seems like the natural like lifespan of things.
Mm-hmm.
Progresso lentil soup is like a childhood favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom would make that. She didn't make a lot of things, but she would just shake a bunch of garlic powder and the canned Parmesan, and it would just become this like thick, like paste, and it was packed with flavor, that's for sure. But it was one of those things where I haven't had it in a long time, but I'm sure if I ate it again, it would kind of take me back.
Yeah, I think that was like childhood, like food. I was thinking the focaccia, the Nuja focaccia served at the dinner really reminded me of Totino's pizza roll.
Mm-hmm. I love Totino's pizza rolls. And the party pizzas too. With the little diced pepperoni.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect dice.
They were $5 for $5 when I was in culinary school, and that was dinner.
Yeah, we used to have to come home like when my mom was like not there. We had to like sneak them, and like it was always a trick to like get the oven hot enough to cook them and get the smell out of the house before mom got home and was like, "Why does it smell like pizza in here?
Why does it smell awesome in here?"
It smells like deliciousness everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, heading short trip that has you out here in New York. I'm kind of curious, though, do you still do the kind of, like, dine around food exploration stuff? Like, does eating out still turn you on?
It's definitely not the same, where I don't get a lot of time, and, I didn't get to eat out anywhere on this trip to New York. It's very short, but I tend to find my regular spots, especially in LA, and I just go back to those places. So, there's just a kind of a handful of places where I go and continue to go back. And I think I kind of know what I like, and I don't know. It's not a, I guess I'm more inclined to really enjoy and appreciate, really simple food that's well prepared and good ingredients, then I think that kind of trumps creativity for me at this point.
Well, with regards to kind of ingredients, what is the like kind of sourcing landscape in LA. I mean, I feel like we're familiar with the, like, Northern California narrative, but I don't really know much about how food gets into LA, what the scene is.
It's, you know, we have a pretty wide area where things come from in LA. It's usually, you know, down to San Diego and up to around Santa Barbara area, which is, you know, it's a huge difference in climate. So, you know, the farmers markets are great. You know, it's you know, that's one of my, you know, that's my, one of my main things is sourcing and working on kind of closing the gap of where things come from. You know, I think it's, you know, we're lucky to be cooking in California. So it seems to me that it's respectful to kind of work with that and not go outside of that for ingredients. So it's, you know, our pork is from, you know, cooked pigs and Julian, and you know, we do get our fish from Passmore Ranch in Northern California. We get our polenta from a mill in Pasadena, and, you know, our vegetables are obviously all from the, you know, farms from 150 miles or so around. I think it's more important to me, as my style has kind of going more in terms of less conceptual, in terms of like clever takes on classic things, and more about, okay, well, we have this great chicken. We're going right now at the market. It's, you know, last week it was carrots and Persian limes, and like next week it's Brentwood corn and roasted lettuce, and it's more about, you know, it's as long as we prepare these things properly, which is a challenge in its own right, it's going to be successful. I don't have to come up with, you know, ironic twists. And sometimes it just happens. Like, it kind of annoys me how I want to do, like, really more straightforward, but my style still goes back to Papa Pomodoro with kimchi and clam pozole. Like, it still kind of goes in that direction. But I also just like the piece of pecorino where it is what it is.
You're like, just get out of the way of the food.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Well, we are just about wrapping up here. One of the things that we were chatting about at the dinner that I wanted to maybe share with some listeners is nicknames in the kitchen, mm-hmm. pet names. What are the terms of endearment in the Rustic Canyon Kitchen? How do you guys, like, what's the shop talk that you can share with us?
You know, I feel like I'm probably more on the outside of what the nicknames are. I don't know if you met Josh, who was there last night. His Instagram name is Vicariously Josh, and he assumed that I had introduced him to you as Bicuriously Josh, which is, I think, a name some of the other cooks gave him. Another name is Depressman, because his last name is Pressman, and he's just kind of like a really low-key guy, not very animated, but seemed like he was smiling a lot yesterday.
Yeah.
And Cody, I think, kind of recently learned his nickname is Toby, I think, just because he's, you know, just a white guy from the Midwest, and thought, like, Toby is just as good a name as Cody, so.
So there's laughs to be had.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, I don't know, it seems like a lot of times the nicknames now are just your Instagram name.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Hardy Eater, and that's Brit Dance Chef, and
just like making its way into all corners, mm-hmm. of life. Well, Chef, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us. I hope it'll be the first of many.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. This, like all 35 of our live weekly shows, is available for free. You can find us at www.heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcast. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps other folks find the station. We are a member-supported nonprofit radio station, so please consider clicking that donate tab and becoming a member today. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in. Yo.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.